Hello, everybody.
Hello, Tyler.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Oh, fine. Thanks.
Hey, hello to you both. Can you hear me?
Yep, you're good, John.
Okay, great.
Hi, Roger.
Hi, Tyler. Can you hear me okay?
And
no.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for participating. We'll give them a few more minutes here to gather in and we'll get going.
Well, you've done a great job on that golf course since this afternoon. There's no snow left on it.
Yeah. I think we'll have all 18 open tomorrow. We'll keep pushing people out.
Good. And
I think Sunday is supposed to be the nicest day of the weekend, and hopefully we'll be busy. Just double check here.
Yeah, you know, I thought of one thing. You should send an email at least to all the men's association that the driving range is open. You know, I didn't know that. And so that might be get some people out because everybody wants to get their swing in shape for the year.
I'm going to do that.
That's a good point. Is the range open, Tyler?
Yeah, it is.
Great.
You going to be up there tomorrow, Roger?
bright and early, rain or snow.
Yeah, we've had a few people hit some balls the last few days, and even though it's been cold. Let's see, I'll let Brian in.
Court.
Hi.
Hi, Court, are you muted or no?
I'm not now.
Okay, we can hear him loud and clear.
I'm not sure you want me to be unmuted. Tyler's got the button. He can control it.
Do you have an ejection seat button, Tyler?
In a sense, yes.
All you need in this day and age is the exit video button. Yep. And the person's gone.
That's right.
I was hoping to hear from Ken earlier today, and I assume that he's coming on here. We'll give Ryan Curtis maybe just a couple more minutes to get logged on here, but let me pull up the meeting agenda while we're waiting. Sure, man. Everybody see that okay?
Yep.
Yep. Coming through clear.
Yes.
That's kind of what we'll run through. I added one little item on there that's on the private parts, but we won't spend too much time on it. But number three and four will take up the bulk of this meeting. So I'll try to fly through some of the other things so we're not delaying everybody getting to dinner and bed.
I have a 6 o'clock call I've got to jump on, so I'm good for an hour. I'm sorry if I have to leave early.
That's okay. I wonder if we just go ahead and let me stop sharing that. See if we've, oh, there's Ken. Okay. And then if Ryan Curtis happens to join, we'll maybe fill him in with where we're at.
Okay. Are we being recorded?
Yeah, recording's going. Andrew is here to make some notes. And
oh, here's Ken. Well, so Ken, we've approved the remodel and the budget for it. So we'd ask if you could have a check ready for us to pick up tomorrow. We'd like to start on it. Thank you, sir.
Very well, Dad Court.
You know, you're 2 minutes late. And
hey, just... whatever it is, I know how to write checks and spend money. So no worries with me. And I'm all sorry right, I'm late. I was just stuck in a different meeting is all.
Okay. Well, since some and people
Brian,
have a tight...
Brian Horrocks said he's trying to get on his phone. So, oh, he's here.
He's here. On his new phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there we go. I didn't
see evidently him. He doesn't want to be seen or heard, but he wants us to know that his new phone is watching us.
Yeah.
His new phone doesn't have a camera. Well, since a few people need to be moving pretty quick, Tyler, do you want to start with five and six? I'll call the meeting to order, and then you know, we can jump into the agenda, but that might work best to cover those two items and then go back to the main meat of the building design.
Yeah, we can do that. Let me share my screen here, and we'll jump into some of the later items. So I'd like your the golf committee's approval on changing the driving range fee schedule from five, eight, and 10 on the range baskets to 6, 9, and 11. I don't see a decrease in usage with that increase. I think we'll not only increase our driving range avenues, but really help pay for some of the amenities that we purchased as far as the bag stands and the new dividers. So, and really pay for future equipment and, you know, a picker and picker unit and things that we're looking for in the future. So I think if we get ahead of this, I know a few other golf courses have up the rates too. So I'm okay with where they're at and comfortable with charging them out. So I'd love to hear some perspective on that. And then secondly, we're going to change our opening hours on the driving range. Instead of being closed Tuesday evenings, we're going to experiment with closing Sunday evenings later and see if that helps generate some revenue that way. We've kind of found Sunday evenings is kind of a slow time, but Tuesday evenings is still pretty popular and we're turning people away. So we think that Sunday evening might be a better. It's a logistically employee-wise, it's a little harder to get the cart kids and everybody in to pick the range that evening, but we're going to try to make it work. So love to, if anybody has any thoughts on that or.
I would say, I think your prices are good. I think they're pretty consistent, if not, you know, right in the mid range of a lot of the other courses around the valley. So I would say that certainly makes sense. And yeah, it would seem that Sunday, you know, definitely slows up any late afternoon and evening. So that would be a good time to close.
Tyler, do you have any plans to resurrect the range ball machine, or are people still going to have to pick up their range balls from behind the counter?
Yeah, there's two thoughts to that. The coin operating mechanism in that range ball machine needs to be repaired. That's not too much money. I think it's around $1,000 for a new mechanism. They have their credit card readers, which are extremely expensive, which is really dumb, but it's $5,000 to $6,000 for that card reader. To me, there's a benefit to having people to come in. They've got to come in and get tokens anyways. And I like the feeling of having that interaction with me, handing them something that they're using and making them come in and purchase balls inside rather than using a credit card outside or coins that they have. I think there's a benefit there that's not really realized, having customers come in. Oftentimes they'll buy something else. We get to meet them, have a little bit more interaction with them. So we've actually even just talked of getting rid of that machine and selling it just to get it out of here. And yeah, that's what I push for.
Yeah, I would agree. If it's going to cost that much to repair, it's not worth it. Is the machine in its current state worth anything?
Yeah, I think we could get probably $1,000 out of it from somebody looking to repair something. It's a heavy machine, so I've got to find the right golf course that wants to come pick it up.
But okay. What's your estimate? How many balls do you get in a medium bucket? It's hard to tell. Do you get about 70 balls in a medium bucket?
Yep. So they're about 40 to 45 in the small, 70, 75 in the medium, and then about 100 in the large, 90 to 100.
Yeah, very good. When you consider the volume of balls per bucket, I think the prices are very, very good.
Okay.
Not bad at all. So.
Good. Okay. Well, if someone will make that recommendation, then
I have one question for you. Have you looked at, I know there was, you guys did have a punch card at one point. I was down, I think, at Fox Hollow this last week and played there, and they have a huge driving range, Tyler, as we talked about. And they actually have a season's pass, which they had a corporate rate of $1,000. Anyway, I guess my only question is there, I'm assuming you've looked at some sort of incentive. The more you buy, the better you get.
I should include it on this as well. And I don't know why I didn't, but we're upping. We have a 20 punch card that was $70. I've upped it to 100. So you can get a little bit of a 20% discount basically on range balls if you buy that punch pass.
Okay.
And that would be part of the fee change. And thanks for bringing that up because I neglected putting that in here.
Which size bucket is that for?
That's just for the small.
Okay.
So they would get 20 small buckets for $100.
Instead of 120?
Yep. So they're saving $20. It comes out to $5 a basket. It used to be $350, which I think is too low. So we needed to change that. We sold a family pass about a year and a half ago. And even before that, we weren't getting the money that, it was being overused, I think.
Yeah. You know,
the kids in the family pass, the kids would come up and they'd get buckets for their friends, and it's hard to police that way.
How do you feel about the possibility of a 20 punch medium bucket for $200?
Yeah, we talked about having different ones. It really just may be a timing issue on that. We can certainly implement something. If you want to recommend that we do a small for 100, medium for one, even maybe 160, and a large for 180, I'd have to do the math. Give them 20% off whatever basket it is. Most of the time, people buy the small punch card, and if they want a medium or large, we'll just fill up that bucket for however many small punches they have. So we're kind of really just giving them 20% off, whether they buy the small punch card or use it to get larges. So we're kind of doing it. It's just only selling one card rather than having three different cards.
Yeah, I wouldn't do three different cards. I would just, you could just even write on it, whether it's for small, medium, or large.
Yeah.
And it would reflect how much they paid up front. And then it would be just a matter of giving them a different size bucket. I would just think that a medium bucket might be more popular. Mm-hmm. And since it would be a higher price, it might be, it's kind of a compromise, I guess, is what it is. You're going to generate a little bit more money, but you're going to give out a few more golf balls too.
Yeah.
Tyler, on the other hand, I would say that, a small bucket is typically what somebody would get before they play a round. And so I think doing a punch card on a small bucket makes more sense rather than giving up money on the bigger ones. If somebody's coming here to really practice, they're not going to mind, paying a little bit more. I don't see a real benefit to the punch card on the bigger one.
But the most punch cards, though, John, are used by people who are just coming over to practice and work out. They're not using it as a warm up. They're using it as something they do every evening because they don't have time to play golf. And I personally would favor a medium bucket because 70 balls, small bucket is not enough balls to give a thorough workout. So you're right in that if you are using it as a warm-up, small is great. But if you're using it as a practice range, which most people are on the punch passes, I think a medium would be more realistic for everybody.
All right. Makes a lot of sense, Roger. Maybe Tyler, just do it on the medium.
Okay. I was writing out, so we could do 100 small punch card for 100, medium punch card for 150, and a large for 180. That kind of gives them about 20%. I'm rounding up and down, but I think for now, I at least moving through a good portion of the season, I'm comfortable just selling the one, and then maybe as we get into more of the July and change fiscal year, we can look at changing that fee to add some different cards.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Would somebody make a motion for that for Tyler?
I make a motion to do what Tyler wants to do.
Well, that's kind of general.
I'm happy to support Tyler.
We're recording this, so no, I'm just kidding.
I make a motion that you do the $6, $9, and $11 for small, medium, and large, and you create a punch card system for small and medium buckets at a 20% discount.
Okay. Perfect. Anybody second?
I'll second the motion. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll get with Ken and get that to the city council for their approval.
All right. I guess we should get a vote on it. Everybody in favor?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Aye.
Okay.
Okay, next, there's been some discussion in several of our golf committee meetings on the private carts. Currently, we're charging $6 for 9 and 12 for 18. That's per cart, not per person. So we're losing out on some revenue by people bringing their, the twosome comes in, they're paying $12 when normally they'd be paying us $36. We're losing out some revenue. So I would like to implement kind of a phasing out of the private golf carts. And the way I recommend doing that is just putting everybody that has one that plays up here, add them onto a grandfather list. And as they move away, as their carts, as they no longer play golf, as they don't renew their, I would call it maybe a private cart membership, that goes away. And maybe some other material on that as we require. If a family owns a private cart, in order for them to bring it on the golf course, they still have to follow our guidelines of being 16 years old with a driver's license. And then once we use this year as kind of a period where people can get on this list, after that, we don't let any new private carts onto the golf course. So if you're not on this grandfather list as of January 1, 2022, you have to pay the full golf course cart rate. So that's what I would propose, and love to hear some feedback. And this may need some more fleshing out, and how do we get them on the grandfather list, and how do we make sure, and some things like that. But just a general, maybe general consensus on moving forward, this would be preferred.
How many people do we have, Tyler, who are consistently bringing a private cart, and how much revenue is it costing the golf course?
I would say we probably have 15 to 20 private golf carts, and then some of them come three or four times a week, and then maybe once a week on those. So it's a significant amount. I would maybe estimate it's in the $5,000 to $6,000 range.
Have you been able to take the temperature of some of the regulars who are using the private cart? If they're forced to pay a higher fee, are they not going to play the golf course? How do we achieve the balance? We don't want to turn anybody away, but we also don't want to, lose revenue unnecessarily.
Yeah, and I think that's the flip side of it too, is right, is we can just say, no, we don't allow any private cart fees or private golf carts, and you have to pay our rate no matter what. John Broberg proposed this, an idea of maybe having a small membership fee to have your private cart on the grandfather list, whether it's $20 or $30 a year, to maybe, it wouldn't recoup all the costs, but it would at least recoup some. And then really limiting, so, you know, Joe Schmo down the road can't give it to his son-in-law or his neighbors or whoever else to come use the golf cart. If you're grandfathered in, it's for you and your immediate family that's living at your household, that's 16 years or older. Kind of make some limitations on that so that it's not free reign like it is right now.
How many other courses allow private carts?
I would say very few. And if they do, they've done something like this to where they've stopped allowing them.
Hey, Tyler, can you let Brian Horrocks in? He's waiting to get
in. Okay, yeah. I might have to. I want to say most of the golf courses in Davis County don't. I vaguely think that Lakeside still does, but I could be wrong on that.
I think you're correct. I think Lakeside does allow private carts. Bountiful Ridge does not.
Right.
And it's kind of a catch-22 where Eaglewood is kind of a tightly knit neighborhood. It would be nice, I suppose, to allow the neighbors who have golf carts to bring them on the golf course. However, those are also some of the people that we've had some problems with, especially with underage kids riding in the carts on the golf course.
Yeah, I think that's one of our bigger issues with that, is making sure that we know, having a sticker on the golf cart, some sort of registration so we know who owns that golf cart, who's operating it, whether we have them take pictures of it so we can look it up on a quick little database on the computers to know whose cart that is, and things like that, to make sure we're monitoring it a little bit better than we are now.
Yeah, I would add, I think we've talked about this for maybe a year, since Tyler came anyway, and it certainly makes sense. And I don't see how anybody who currently owns a private cart could get very upset, because, I mean, they're grandfathered in as long as they're here. Yeah. It just precludes new people from doing it. So, I mean, when you go to the Salt Lake City courses, I've never seen a private cart on any of those courses. So I think it is pretty rare, and probably time, to eliminate it, especially for some of the problems that we've had with them.
Yeah. And I think this step helps soften that blow of us just saying you can't bring it on. It allows them to still use it for X amount of years they want to be here, and eventually they'll be phased out and we won't have any, which is the goal, I think.
Yeah, I think we're moving in the right direction. I wouldn't want to create any administrative problems, though. You don't want to have anybody needing to spend time registering and taking pictures of other people's golf carts. That's but we're talking really about 20 carts. Is that what I understood?
Yeah, I would guess it's about that. And it really wouldn't be much for me to set up a form that they have to submit. So it wouldn't be really any work other than me setting up a form that they do submit online and pay every year. And whether it's a nominal fee or not, whether we don't charge, but having that on them to make sure that they're following through, just like any car registration, it's on them to make sure they get it done.
But the long-term goal is to phase out use of private carts, correct? Yeah, I would be in agreement with that.
Okay.
Tyler, maybe you put them on notice that there's not a fee currently, but that will change, at some point.
Yeah.
Well, there is a fee currently.
Oh.
Yeah, to play there is that fee that they have to pay when they come and play. And I'm speaking more towards
the registration fee.
Yeah, $20 to stay on the grandfather list, and then you still pay your fees on top of that. So it's almost like a somewhat of a season pass for them, but they still have to pay a discounted rate. So I'll move forward with that and kind of make some signups and some notifications, make sure we get it out to everybody that we see that owns a private cart, and then kind of go from there. And
All right. Tyler, I think we probably should put this to a vote too, to,
okay,
you know, give you a sort of authority to go ahead and do that. So would somebody like to make a motion?
Yes, I'll make the motion that we adopt we keep the current fee, but we also move toward eliminating private carts, and that we request that all private carts be registered so that we have a record and can track them.
I'll second.
Okay, and Brian seconded. So all those, any more discussion on it? If not, all those in favor?
Yeah. I just have a question. So on your motion, Roger, are you, does that include all the recommendations that you're seeing on the screen from Tyler?
Yes, the current fees would remain, Ken, and we need to register, and they'll be grandfathered in with the long-term goal of phasing out all private parts.
Okay, because I think from here, Tyler would probably implement what you're seeing on the screen, if that's
right.
What we're that's understanding.
Correct. I mean, I guess a question that just comes up in my mind when someone can ask that. I mean, should we also look at perhaps beginning of next fiscal year raising that price? I mean, we've raised the price for around, and we've raised the price for carts for other people. I would think that the prices on these should go up too, maybe not significantly, but at least a little bit.
Yeah, so I would plan on, my plan is to up the general cart fee from 9 and 18, and I would do the same with the private carts. And maybe we make it the same amount. So I certainly plan on increasing that as we go throughout the years. So every time we increase the cart fees, the private cart fee will increase as well.
All right. So
okay. Yeah. In fact, I'll modify the motion so that we are also approving the right to increase these private cart fees by the same percentage that we increase incrementally all of the normal cart fees also. That's a fair way to do it.
Okay.
Okay, or Roger, could I ask you, instead of saying a percentage, say the same dollar amount, because the percentage here would be a lot lower.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll second that, John.
Okay, so I guess we've discussed it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? All right. Good. All right.
Okay. This one is a little bit of a sticky, maybe not a sticky conversation. So in the past years, Eaglewood Golf Course has run a junior, what's called a junior mini tour. It was a little three-hole league played every Monday during the summer for juniors. Limited to 50 juniors. If you signed up for that junior mini tour, you received a discounted rate for golf. It was $3 for nine, Monday through Thursday. I executively kind of eliminated that, and I'm moving more towards doing what's called youth on course. And maybe some of you are familiar with this. This is a nationwide nonprofit organization that helps subsidize golf for juniors. The Youth on Course of Utah is run by the Utah Golf Foundation. They do fundraising. They raise money to appropriate funds to the golf courses that run their program. One of the first things I did here at Eaglewood was apply to be part of their Youth on Course program. We've moved up from being eighth on the waiting list to, I think now we're number two. I was hoping to get on it this year, but we're not. They filled up for what funds they had. So I think optimistically we'll be on this subsidy program next year. But I've been approached by them to still offer a discounted rate without subsidy, but looking at other options that we can raise funds on our own to help pay for some of these rounds. So their premise is, and I'll try to be short. The premise is, you, if you read through those, is that they offer 9 holes for $5 for kids to play golf. I think it's an incredible program. I did that in Spanish Oaks, you know, grew junior golf tenfold with the amount of golfers that played. And I would attribute a lot of that growth to being accessible for kids to play at this discounted rate. So in short, I'd like some feedback or maybe recommendation on allowing us to have a youth on course day, which would be Tuesday, for kids to play for $5, and look at doing a youth on course day that we can raise money, whether it's a tournament or asking for funds as people come play, to help us really subsidize the discount we're giving. So I'd love some input there and maybe some thoughts on that. If we're not ready to do this year, I hope to get on it next year. What program they would do is they would probably give us $3 to $5 per round. So we're getting anywhere from $8 to $10 per kid playing. So the kid pays $5. We collect that from them. And then the Utah Golf Foundation would reimburse us that different amount each month. So anyways, that's the program, and love some input.
And is it typically a 9-hole round or an 18-hole round?
Yeah, so they can play 9 or 18. It's just $5 per 9. So if they wanted to play 18, okay, we would charge 10.
Okay. What age group do we qualify for the youth?
I think it's 18 years and younger is their qualification. It actually might be 17 now that I think about it. I think it's 17 and under.
Yeah, I think it is 17 and under. It's a tremendous program. The balancing act, of course, is, you know, during the COVID, of course, if the golf course is going to be all tee times crowded with general play, of course, it's always hard to justify that. But the undermining return on investment, of course, is long term. You're generating new golfers and you're generating your new customers for a lifetime.
Yeah.
So it's an excellent program. And if you can do it, and if you can limit number of youth rounds available per Tuesday, which may be difficult, I think it's a great program and I think it's a win-win, but you have to be a little bit careful. Obviously you don't want to give away prime tee times for $5 if you can't help it. But it is a long-term investment, and it's hard to quantify any immediate return on investment. Although there is a small return on investment, but it's a great long-term thing, and you're building and developing players for tomorrow. So you're developing your long-term customers. So I would be in favor of it. It's a little bit ticklish, as you know, Tyler, to manage something like this. You have to be a little bit careful.
Yeah, so to note with that, I wouldn't allow anybody playing, whether it's an adult playing with a youth on course member, but I would not allow any youth on course members to make a tee time. It would be a standby time only. So it really is just based on availability. So they'd really have to come up to the golf course and walk on. And I think that would be one stipulation they have. And we'd send that out with their membership. And you know, there's still going to be the few that squeeze through with their dad that makes a tee time or what. But as we move more towards solely 100% online tee times paid, I think that eliminates the dad calling and getting a tee time for a twosome over the phone and bringing his son in and paying a discounted rate. So as we kind of move more towards the all online, it'll eliminate that obstacle.
But would you block out a 2-hour time frame on Tuesday morning or some such thing where it was kind of reserved for youth on course, so that they know that if they show, they pretty much have a, you know, 99% chance of getting on the golf course? Or is it just a crapshoot? Come, and if we can accommodate you, we will.
Yeah, I think that's kind of why I wanted to limit it to Tuesdays. I still wanted to encourage and still run the program. I think if we had more, if the Utah Golf Foundation was giving us a subsidy, I'd be more open to more days. You know, we can expand this as we're getting more funding for that program.
Yeah, I would agree. I do like your idea, though. I mean, you're getting $5 for 9 holes instead of 10, correct?
Yeah, 11 is our junior rate.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, I mean, it's not a total loss. And, you know, you want to encourage the juniors, the youths, to come out and play. So it's kind of, again, it's kind of a balancing act, yeah, once again.
And it helps us grow our other junior golf programs. I mean, our junior association and junior golf camps. And
right,
if we can't get them up there, then they don't want to participate. But if they want to, then we can. And it kind of grows from there. So.
Right.
A question, Tyler, I think I missed. So you missed the opportunity to partner with Utah Golf Foundation this year, but you can sign up for next year. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I put us on a waiting list in June when I started last year. So we were eighth on that waiting list. So as they're getting more funding, they're allowing more and more courses to join this Youth on Course program. So we're close to entering into their subsidy program.
I love it. I think it's a great community service.
I'm not going to pander to the Foxborough area, but my goal is to get more of those people of the city up to the golf course. I hate that they think that Eaglewood's not accessible to them, or maybe golf is too expensive. I want to kind of get rid of that notion and really get people up here. And, you know, we'll do some other community events that we've talked about, but let's get some of the kids out on the west side of town up here playing golf rather than going down to Lakeside or elsewhere, Pearls Park or,
yeah,
you know, they live in North Salt Lake. Let's get them up playing the golf course in North Salt Lake.
Yeah, it's a great idea, Tyler, and it's a great program. You can also, as you already know, you know, you can, if you schedule a couple of hours, you know, like from between 8 to 10 a.m. on a Tuesday during the summer and make it consistent, you could also conduct a brief 30-minute clinic for juniors prior to that, where, you know, you can have people give instruction and, you know, and as you said, maybe we can find a business or yeah, maybe maybe even the PGA, such as myself, would subsidize, you know, some hot dogs and drinks and things and turn it into a fun, you know, two and a half hour situation for the juniors. So, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of possibilities.
Yeah.
One thought, Tyler, would it make sense to limit this to use in North Salt Lake? Since the, you know, yeah, the city's basically subsidizing it.
Yeah, that's true. They Youth on Course, they sell memberships through the Utah Golf Association. So, you know, like us as amateur golfers or professional golfers, we are assigned to a specific golf course. So if I want to renew my handicap, I'm an Eaglewood Golf Course member. As these kids sign up to the UGA, their association is with the Youth on Course. So it would be difficult for us to know, okay, Billy down the street, he lives in Bountiful, but he has Youth on Course. It would be difficult for us to do it. I would say that 90% of the kids that come play and use Youth on Course are going to be within a 10-mile radius of here. I don't think we'll see much of abuse from kids from other towns coming to use it. It's going to be pretty local.
Tyler, do we know, I've got a couple of thoughts here. You know, we all learned how to ski in fifth grade because they came through the schools. And but then my thought was, well, summertime, the schools are closed, except I'm not sure that Foxborough is non-year-round school. Do we know?
I'm not sure. But, you know, that's on my radar for, well, this is a big undertaking, but to get all of the junior high and elementary schools up here on a, I would call it a golf day. I used to do it in Spanish Fork, where I would go to the schools and give them clinics and give them information on golf and Youth on Course and junior golf camps. But I think it would be a great tool for us to use the facility we have to invite schools, you know, pick 2 or 3 days that John, Brent, and I go to the driving range, and we just have a plethora of school buses running through and dropping kids off. And like Roger said, having lunch with hot dogs, and there's lots of opportunity for us to get everybody involved and up here. We just need to make the effort and time to do it at really minimal cost. I mean, yeah, I can reach out to some of these schools in Foxborough to see if there's any interest, if they do have year-round school, or if they've got some summer school programs, so we can get on some of those and work those in. I think that's a great idea.
So the other thing that's happening that didn't happen last year is the city has a summer rec program.
Wow.
And that's a bit of a stretch to say it's a rec program. It's really a summer activity program. We're starting to do youth soccer, and maybe there's a way to also provide some classes that would be the youth on course program. But I think we can reach. So this rec program lasts for about 3 weeks at the beginning of summer, and then about 3 weeks in the fall. And I think it would be a good thing for us to offer. That would be one more way to reach some folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a little skills activity, Ken, available for kids, usually elementary and some middle school kids, where they come up to the golf course, as Tyler said, and you don't even have to go out on the golf course. That's another big advantage Eaglewood has. With its driving range, you can set up either just a little putting course on the practice putting green, which can be a lot of fun, and you can set up a chipping course. But you can, the PGA section has a golf Zilla blow up, and kids love that. You can chip into it, and you can also hit those plastic golf balls and. Snag balls, yeah, snag golf, and so you can put together even a 1 hour activity, and what it does, it really gets the kids interested, and you'd be surprised, there's about a 40% return usually on something like that, where they tell their parents they need to go back to the golf course and learn how to play golf. It generates some good business long term.
I think that's probably something I need to get on as soon as possible, whether it's through the summer rec program or we do both, on contacting some of these schools before we, I'd like to get them in the spring rather than.
Tyler, I think I was just talking to one of our rec, we have two part-time employees run that program, and they are really looking for ways to fill classes and expand into different classes. This would be a great marriage of golf and the rec program. So we'll talk after this. And
okay.
Hey, Ken.
I'd like to suggest at this point, I know some people are pressed for some time. Since there seems to be general support for this, do you want to vote on this, Tyler, to authorize you to go ahead and move forward? All right, so somebody want to make that motion? Anybody?
I'll make the motion.
What would the motion be?
I make a motion that we do what Tyler wants to do.
All right. I mean, I think, Court, just you want to make the motion.
That we follow Tyler's suggestion on youth on course, which is yet to be finalized, but support him and the program.
All right. I'll second that. So is there any more discussion? If not, all is in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right.
John, let me, I just want to, hey, Ken.
Yeah.
When I was daily involved up in Kaysville at the Boondocks, we worked, Kaysville has a very, very elaborate summer
recreation and activity program.
And I don't know how cities talk back and forth, but they had golf, they had bowling, they had basketball, they had soccer, they had some programs that intermix. So to the degree you could reach out and talk, spend an hour with their rec to people, you'd be, yeah. I mean, they're way down the road, and they had a very mature program that was great. Very well attended.
Thank you, Kurt.
Okay, Tyler, I'd like to go back. I think we passed over approving the minutes, and we probably should do that for housekeeping items. So are there any corrections to the minutes from the February 10th meeting? If not, would somebody make a motion to accept the minutes?
Yeah, I'll make the motion that we accept the minutes from the previous meeting as written.
Okay, is there a second?
I second that.
All right, Karen, thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, Tyler, go ahead.
Okay, this will be, we'll jump into this. I don't know, I don't even know where to quite start on the building, but here's just a picture to refresh your mind on what JZW has put together for us. And here is the overview of the kind of floor plan, excluding any of the cafe or pro shop interiors, but included the expanded upper room and the event center. So the reason I want to talk about this today, and I've mentioned it to several of you, is maybe some uneasiness of me after our last meeting, before we presented it to the city council. Once we kind of received the breakdown on estimated cost, really just evaluating that and looking at where we're spending money and what the potential returns are with spending that money. And kind of mulling it over, just kind of thought to myself, I'm not quite sure if this is the direction or if we're changing too much and accomplishing not enough. And maybe looking at some other avenues or some other ideas that we may have to come up with something that's more, either more feasible or more long lasting for the city of North Salt Lake. I have kind of three different scenarios to maybe talk about. And Ken and I have had some discussion too on what we really should be doing moving forward. And we can kind of talk about that as well. The current scenario, what I have listed there is a breakdown of what JZW has presented to us. So this is their estimated cost, what the building would take to get it done. And really they quoted us at $2.5 million, but I've added in a need, what I think there is for HVAC, electrical, audio, video in the event center, and then a contingency of just about 10% of that total. So I come to $3 million on what JZW is presenting to us on the cost. There's, as you look through there, there's some small amounts and then some large amounts. You know, you get into the interior remodel and additions. Let me just jump back to this page. That, you know, the interior remodel additions includes any of these expansions, moving walls, changing the peaks of the roof, changing the roof lines, things like that included in that major expense. I kind of looked through that and said, well, what if we took off all these expansions and kind of estimated myself, what would kind of a facelift for the current building look like, and what would that cost? And I came up with $1.8 million, and I'll preface that with saying I'm not a general contractor. I haven't sent out bids for the exact amount of materials, but with my knowledge of construction and estimation, this is kind of, I think, a pretty good ballpark on what it would cost to really just do the basics of the building with the roof, the facade, HVAC, bathrooms, some really major needs for the building. I think we can come in under $2 million to get that done. And then kind of really throwing a dart in the air and hoping it sticks on the right place and on a really full new construction building, tearing down what we currently have and building something new. JZW got back to me, I think it was either late yesterday or today, on estimated cost of building the same size buildings, same square footage, and very similar products on the exterior and roof to be about $4.75 to $5.5 million. I think that might be a little bit high. I think we could accomplish it by doing maybe a little simpler construction, maybe a little bit more modern and clean lined rather than, but nevertheless, that's kind of what they came up with. So I think we're kind of in that range on a new construction building. And I wanted to bring this again. I know we might be feel like we're beating a dead horse on this, but I really don't want us to go down the wrong path now and then 10, 15 years from now, wish we would have done it differently or needing to change something else or redo it again. I want to make sure we're doing something that's long lasting and that works and make sure we're doing it right. So I'd love some input on that or thoughts, or if we want to run through some of these scenarios. I know some of you've got to leave here about 15 minutes. So I tried to run through that quickly, but you can, if you want to jump in here, if you have any other insight that we've talked about or.
Tyler, let me just bring up one thing. I mean, I don't know if everybody remembers from the minutes, but our vote at the last meeting was to approve the fundamental concept of the exterior with the understanding that there would be slight modifications as well as a more thorough review of the interior details at a later time. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're suggesting here is that, you know, the concept looks fine, but you know, the devil's in the details, and we have yet to get to those details.
Yeah, in a sense, it really just, it's hard to say, and Brian might have more insight into this than I do, and Ken probably as well, but what can the golf course afford to spend, and what amount is the city council willing to give us? Those are my two unknowns. I have an idea on what the golf course can afford, but it's just a difficult question. The difficult questions to answer, and I know the city council will have those questions. So,
yeah, maybe Ken is and Brian, what bonding monies are available now? And we discussed several meetings ago. Are we eligible for any federal funds dating back to the damage done to the roof, et cetera, by the windstorm when the governor declared a state of emergency? And then the reason why I ask about funding, to Tyler's point, and I think everyone else is seeing it, when you see $3.1 million, and we know that maybe for 4.5 to 4.75 million, you can build an entirely new facility. You're getting close to the point of diminishing returns where you'd probably have to lean toward building an entirely new facility cost-wise. But the X factor is, you know, I mean, aren't the bonding situations pretty favorable right now, Ken?
Let me address that. Those are great questions, Roger. And you have articulated quickly the dozens of conversations that Tyler and I have had about this, because as the costs went over $3 million, we began to ask ourselves, you know, would we be better off to look at a demolition? Now, we asked this price for new construction that's on your screen is for a replacement of 100% of the square footage that's there. I personally think that we could get by with a beautiful but much smaller clubhouse with a pro shop in one building. And I'm talking new construction here. And then a very beautiful separate building, which would be purposefully constructed to handle a restaurant and a reception center, taking advantage of the top of the hill where the building is now. So I'm not convinced that, I mean, I don't know how much that's going to cost, but when we start talking about $3 million, I went where Roger has gone, and that is, is it better for us to consider new construction? Now, the state of the city's ability to borrow money is excellent. We have an excellent credit rating. We have low interest rates right now for public lending. And so it's really not a question of, can we get the money and can we get cheap money, because we can. It's whether it's what level of risk you know, is the governing body willing to take, which I think is now becoming a critical question. It's the question we always come to. I think Tyler has done a good job with a suggested change, and maybe his list can even be changed further, but his scale down scenario, I think, is a wise look at what we could do to both to fix the building, because if you look on his list, many of those things are not necessarily aesthetic upgrades. They're items that we have deferred and have left unaddressed for a long time, like the roof, the HVAC, the electrical, and some interior, I would suggest some interior work that should have been done already, but we've ignored it basically. So, I mean, which is the problem we're grappling with. You asked also, Roger, one more question that just went out of my head. I think these are the scenarios, you know, that are, oh, you asked about insurance on the roof. So we did get an insurance payment from our insurance carrier. So we have that money in the bank. And so we have some funds. I think it was about 62,000, Tyler.
Yep.
So the last time we got bids on the roof, it was almost $200,000. So I think Tyler's roofing estimate is probably accurate. Okay. But there are things that we, you know, that we could do to spend less. Now, I don't think that that's really the direction that the golf course committee wants us to head. If you had your preference, I think you guys would want to either remodel or build new, but at least as I've attended your meetings, that's what we've been talking about. So,
right. Well, the interesting thing about the scale down scenario is that can be done in phases, correct?
Probably some of it.
And I suppose the current scenario can also. I love that idea of building, you know, starting new, but building two separate buildings. And that way you can certainly justify the second building being the event center and clubhouse as being more of a community-wide multi-use facility. I think that's a great idea, because then you don't have to be staffing the golf side of things when you're also staffing the event center. So that's a tremendous idea. Those private clubs who have them separate, and I'll just mention Willow Creek Country Club, for example, have found that to be a godsend, because they can do golf and they can do events completely separately. Golf doesn't have to intersect with weddings, for example, so as much as they do now. And you know, now when we have a wedding, you know, George can't do the wedding and provide food service for the golfers, for example. So, you know, but I think that's a great idea. So we have a couple of different viable scenarios, I think. I mean, it's just a matter of how much money, and obviously new construction or constructing two new buildings would be looking at the long-term viability and sustainability of the entire facility. So, you know, it's just to whether, do we want to do a Band-Aid? You know, do we want to do a Band-Aid, or do we want to do a long-term situation where you're an all new look? So
let me just say a word about timing. And I don't mean to cut you off, Court. Sorry. The timing of this, you also ought to have in the back of your mind that when we talk about borrowing money, the one thing that we have, as which is a disadvantage, is we only have one season of what I would say is recovery under our belt. And so if we wanted to use the city's available cash to fix the roof and make sure we get that completed, which I think is not a risk, even if we tear the building down later or we, yeah. or we upgrade or something later. I think the roof has to be done. Now, Tyler has, Tyler, I don't mean to speak for you. I'm trying to go fast. I think that we, Tyler believes maybe we could go one more season on the roof. My point is, it would be easier for the city council to talk about repayment scenarios and bonding terms if we had two seasons of profit making under our belt.
I agree.
With Tyler's excellent leadership up here in this enterprise. And so I also we are going to make every attempt here to reassess. I know I've said this before, reassess George Yonge's contract. We've tried to do that. We've met with him a few times. I think we need to meet with him again. John, I wanted to thank you for your email. We've been talking about a rental scenario rather than a performance related payment. And so I think there are ways to do that, but I know the council, if the council had two seasons of robust profits under their belt, I don't think they would be as concerned about issuing a long-term 20-year bond or something to do whatever we wanted to do.
No, I would agree with that. And that's why I say
Hey, Roger, could we get Court in here? Because Court's
go ahead, Court.
Yeah. I've got to go. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude and butt in, but I've got to jump on another call. So, Ken, for the record, you, I think you know where I stand. The building is 30 years old, 30 years worn out. And honestly, it's more of a house with an addition than a golf shop or a pro shop. And honestly, starting from scratch where you could actually put in simulator bays in the pro shop so you can sell equipment and in the winter actually drive sales and creating an event center that actually acts as a community center. So I'm for it. My only suggestion I got to hang up is I think there are people out there who assess this stuff and know it inside and out. Roger probably, I mean, there's got to be, and what I'm saying is not the architect across the street from you guys. I'm talking about a golf architect who their whole business model is working with golf courses and they work on, I don't know, 15, 20 a year or remodels. So they can look at our building and give us a quick and dirty, I mean, they can tell us what's doable or not doable or what's savable or what's not savable. So, and I'd love to have a longer discussion over lunch or dinner or not, but I just think, I'm sorry, I've got to go, but I'm in favor of creating something that's going to be here for 30 years. This is the jewel of North Salt Lake. It can, the property cannot be duplicated, and Utah is only getting to be more desirable and more desirable every single year as a place to live. And so I think if you let it run down, it's just going to run down. You raise the level, and honestly, everything's going to raise with it. So anyway, I apologize for having to run, but that's my two cents. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Court. Thanks, Court.
Let me know if we need to meet again. Like I said, I think it's a deep discussion and various plus opinions. So thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Roger,
I would basically share Court's opinion. Maybe what we do is I think the roof is an extremely high priority. Obviously, you know, we have to address that sooner rather than later. But long term, I think the city and its residents would be better served by creating two separate buildings, as Ken outlined, and because it has such long term viability. I mean, everything flourishes, and you're not you're not bound by one or the other. Golf flourishes on its own merit, stands on its own two legs, as does the event center and reception center. So,
and I think I'll just add into there. I think that's the question of the new construction, but I think that allows us to really evaluate what other needs there are for the city, whether it's a you know, expanding recreation program to where we can include city offices within a new building, or I think that opens us up to looking at all options and all things that may be included at the same time, maybe incorporated into that. I would probably suggest more on the event center side and keep the clubhouse separate. But anyway, just wanted to add that as we're talking.
So let me ask you a question here, Tyler and Ken. I mean, to move this forward, I think there seems to be a consensus. You know, we've got to define our needs. If we really, you know, had a firm that specializes in golf courses come and, you know, give us a plan, I mean, then we could do a real feasibility study, because hopefully some of these things would generate more revenue. I mean, especially like, see, if you had, you know, simulator bays so that you could operate all winter, you know, and if you had a restaurant that could operate year round, I mean, you could change the dynamics quite a bit. So, I mean, I guess I'm one. I've had leaky roofs in buildings. You can usually get by with a leaky roof for at least a couple more years. You know, it seems rather than spend that money right away, I mean, unless we get another windstorm that really does it in, I mean, to me, it seems like this is about 2 years down the road by the time you would bond it and then build it. You know, I guess I would suggest we would wait on the roof, yeah. You know, so worst case scenario.
Tyler's right. He told me he thinks the roof can make it another season, and I'll trust his word on that. Not that I won't blame him if it leaks too much either.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, they can patch it.
Yeah. John, you know, before the Hale Center Theater moved to Sandy and to West Valley, it was on Main Street. And I sat there one night, one rainy night, watching a play, holding a bucket that they provided for me. It was,
you know, well, that story goes with Frank Lloyd Wright, if you're aware of it or not. The Mellon Bank Building in Pittsburgh has always leaked. And he said, right. Well, I do the design. I don't do the waterproofing. You know, and they have buckets all over that building to this day.
Tyler, so, quick question. Did you get up to the Hill Clubhouse? Or
no, I tried to go up there Monday, but Tim, the head golf pro there that I was going to meet up there, had meetings all day, so I haven't had a chance to go up. I've looked at the pictures. They were, with including their cart barn, he told me it was $5 million.
Oh, okay. So it was more than,
yeah,
than we thought.
What he originally told me was 2.5 was just the clubhouse portion. So yeah. Didn't include the event center or cart barn.
Well, it definitely, you know, I can't speak for the other members of the council, but I hate to spend $2 million on an old building. You know, and we faced this with the old city hall. It was actually more expensive to renovate that old worthless building than it was to build a new one. But having said that, Bountiful City went through the same scenario, and the residents raised such a fuss that they're renovating an old building for more money than a new building would have cost. So you just, I hate to make any decision political when it should be economic, but yeah. I definitely would. I like the idea of spending money on a new building,
yeah,
as opposed to, you know.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest struggle is, if we spend $3 million now, over 30 years, are we going to spend more than we were if we just had built something new to start with? Kind of the same notion, but, you know, if we do it right now, is this the next building going to last another 40 years rather than 10? So.
Yeah, well, I would still add in there, you know, you got to consider additional revenue. And, you know, if your company or your golf course, I mean, you got to look at growth, and you know, you can only put so many rounds of golf out on the golf course per year. So at some point you max out how much golf you can possibly play. Of course you can raise your rates, but beyond that, I mean, the banquet facility has not been generating really anything, nor has the restaurant, and nor have we done anything with simulation bays and, you know, really the whole gamut of club fitting and all of that type of thing. So, I mean, the revenue that is potential out there that is not that difficult to generate, you know, seems to, you know, be a factor that would come in here too. I mean, I'm sure it's not going to be $1 million a year, but if it was $200,000 a year, it would probably cover the debt service cost. And so it would certainly make sense. So, I mean, I think we need, you know, as Court mentioned, we need to get a consultant in here who really does this kind of work all the time and tell us what makes sense. And then, you know, do the feasibility study along with it of what potential revenue you can generate. You know, you always take that number, cut it in half and say, okay, this is realistic, you know, our best case, worst case scenario. And then, you know, once you have that, it's a lot easier for a city council or anybody to make a decision because, I mean, you look at it and if it makes sense, it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, I mean, you go back to the drawing board. So, I mean, I guess my recommendation would be to move ahead, Ken, and, you know, get some kind of consultant in here as soon as we could.
Yeah, let me. So I've got three. I would one of them somewhat local, and I kind of wanted to share. I've been looking at all of their things the last few days. Let me just share one of them, and I'll send maybe these links out to these architects so you guys can see. This is Brian Curtis Studios. They're out of Scottsdale, Arizona. They've done quite a few golf courses throughout the nation, but I would say a significant amount in Utah. Not only design but construction. So they've, you know, I've got two on here with two concept drawings they've got for Nibley Park and Bonneville. But I'll send this link to you. But they've done anything from, you know, simple small barn style clubhouses to, you know, Pine Meadows in Arizona. That's a $10 million building, and it just there's a lot of information on here and some cool architecture that I think is probably a little bit more expansive and more golf centered than what JZW or other local architects could come give us. And the other one would be JRCA. They're out of Salt Lake City. They've done several recently for the city of Salt Lake and a lot of governmental buildings as well. Let me see if I can. But I'll send these links out to you. They've got some, they just did Nibley Park, I think, or Mick Riley, this is here on that page. So they've done a few other golf courses. So there's some, what I would call experts around, and Roger may know of more than I do of some good architecture firms that I think can give us some direction and really maybe more than what we've received so far and a better layout and how the process would work and what they would do and where they would do it. So anyways.
Yeah, the other thing we have to keep in mind, by the way, when we're considering capital improvements and asking the council to approve things, we still need to prioritize. I can't help going back to the old Great Life Utah discussion days, Ken, when we know that we have a failing irrigation system, and so that needs to be somewhere on our list of priorities also. So it's not like, you know, where do we place the clubhouse and event center? We, you know, unfortunately, we have a facility that's 25, 26 years old now, so things are going to start failing.
Yeah, and I think I've always thought that if we're going to issue some debt, that we throw the irrigation repair into it, which we think is closer to, Tyler, you correct me, but it's closer to $500,000, not $4 million, right?
Yeah, I would say it's probably closer to two if we can get the controllers appropriated next few years too. I would say $2.5 to $3 million for a full renovation.
Yeah, but what we found with our irrigation consultant is we're not in as bad a condition as we thought.
No.
Oh, that's great to know. And again, you know, we can do different things in phases. You don't have to do it all at once. So yeah.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's our attempt for our last meeting is at getting the controllers appropriated 4 or 5 a year to kind of get those updated prior to a bigger expense on lateral lines and main lines and a bigger irrigation project. But.
Yeah, and if you devote, you know, funding to capital improvements annually rather than deferring for 10 or 15 years, obviously it, in the long term, it's a lot easier on everybody. And so, I know I'm preaching to the choir on that, but that's the way you need to, we need to budget for capital improvements every year, and it's hard when you're losing money. If you're losing big money, it's hard to do that. So it's hard to justify the expenditure. So
I think, and you, anybody correct me if I'm wrong, but the consensus would be to examine and really evaluate what a new construction building would A, look like, and B, benefit the city and the golf course. I think that's the direction I kind of wanted to go tonight, to make sure we're on the right path and page, but that's kind of what I'm understanding from everybody.
Yeah, and simultaneously identify potential revenue streams with the new facility that would justify the expense, so that we can show the council that we can make 2 and 2 add up to 4, not add up to 3. So,
okay.
What I heard John say, I think, was a kind of a business model or a business plan.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Once they would inspect the building and you've determined what's going to be included on the inside, I mean, why are you including those things? If they're revenue generators, you have to estimate the revenue, and then you come to a new bottom line. And so, that hopefully would make it more palatable.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think maybe Ken and I will talk tomorrow on who to look for. And if Roger, maybe if you have any thoughts or ideas on architects, we can maybe have a discussion on that. And I'll make some progress on that in the next month. And
Great.
Kind of go from there. And if anybody has any thoughts in between, then feel free to shoot me an email or text. Or maybe what we could do is do a little exercise and have everybody send in what their priorities may be. Mine may be different than others, but we can kind of compare and have some things to take to an architect on concepts to include some things. So, but I think discussion has been helpful, and I have some direction, I think, to take it further. So I appreciate that.
All right, good. The only other thing I saw on the agenda here, Tyler, was advertising update. Do you want to address that? Or?
Yep, I just wanted to give you, some of you probably already looked through that, had it on the page, just a snapshot where we're at. We're still in pretty good shape for moving into the season and getting going in March. It's been a little busy the last couple of days, so we hope to continue that. I'm going to jump through some of these. So I didn't throw any numbers on here, but we're running some advertising on Facebook, Instagram, Google, Blip billboards. We're starting on Friday again. And then we've just got some, we've got some digital marquee board in the lobby that running some things on. If you haven't been up here, it looks pretty nice. And here's just some examples of some of the A-frame advertising we'll have as you come into the golf course, and then as you're on the driving range. I printed several, but a lot of them will just be programs and tournaments and events that are going on, so we can draw some interest for people that are playing. Along with that, we have our men's association starting on April 1st. That's our first event. We've had a few signups. We hope to keep that growing. We have the Thursday Spark Golf League. We're up to 138 members, which is incredible. I think we'll get about half of that during play on Thursday. So some of the things we're doing and have advertised, they're working. We'll keep continuing to do those and have some success that way. The event center running in an advertisement for event center, we've been, I would say, much busier than I would have expected coming out of COVID still. So I'm optimistic there that we can make some revenue and generate some that way. That's all I had for the golf committee. I tried to keep it somewhat short, but anybody have any other questions or comments?
Tyler, is that Northern Utah Open locked in now? Is that on everybody's schedule, UGA, Utah Section PGA?
Yep, it should be printed with the Book of Golf here. I know they were printing it last week. We had a call with the Utah Section PGA, so those should be going out and on their website anytime. And I've got everything set up on our website ready for registration as soon as I open it up. I think I've got April 1st as the first day to sign up. So
I think that's great. Yeah. Did you place an ad in the Utah Book of Golf?
I didn't, only because they charge significantly more than what I think our return can be with online advertising.
What do they charge for one of their little pages?
I want to say it was $2,500 for a year.
And wow,
that's a lot of online advertising.
That shows you how old I am. When I last checked in, it was $950 for a full page.
Yeah, it's quite a bit for a full page ad. I think the half page ad might have been $1,200 or something like that. But
yeah, well, that's
wasn't quite worth.
It's hard to justify a cost like that. I'm surprised they're charging that much. How do they justify it? What's their circulation on that? How many do they print up?
Well, and that's what's interesting is they stated to me this is the last year they're doing the printed version. They'll no longer be sending them out. It'll all be digital. And from what they've told me, they're going to charge the same for digital advertising on there too. So
no, that doesn't make sense.
I apologize, but I need to leave this meeting right now. I've got another meeting coming. So
okay, take care, Karen.
Okay, will do. And thank you, and well done, Tyler. Thanks, see Karen. You later.
Okay, thanks, Karen.
Yeah, that's. I think you made the prudent decision there, Tyler. That's that doesn't sound right, but it is what it is, right?
I told with Randy Dodson and Jesse Dodson, they run Fairways Media. I told them if you have any blank openings, on your quarterly stuff you send out, if you want to give me a deal on them, let me know. And I doubt I hear from them, but
yeah,
something becomes available, we'll look at doing something in there. I know the reach we're getting with online advertising, and it's significantly more than I think we would get. I can target those same people for a tenth of the cost. Mm-hmm. And local, they're coming from the Salt Lake, Davis County area rather than Monticello.
Mm-hmm. What about that discount book that the section puts out?
Yeah, so I changed, we're doing it's basically matching what we were doing for the afternoon special. I've got it running Monday through Thursday, $40 for 18. It's only good for an individual person. So I really cut back on that to limit some abuse that was happening with that as well.
Yeah. No, very good. I was just wondering about that. It's, you have to adjust your advertising and marketing depending on, last year, we barely had an open tee time. So there's no reason to beat the drum quite as loudly. But if the situation were different, obviously, if you needed to generate a 40% increase, obviously, you'd have to do more advertising. So it sounds like you're well balanced. It sounds very good.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Only item I see left on the agenda is to adjourn. Anybody want to so move?
Motion for adjournment.
Okay, seconded. Thanks, everybody, for your input. And
thanks, everybody.
Tyler, thanks for do a great job.
Yeah. We'll have to all get out golf soon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Take care, everybody. Stay safe.
You guys. Stay safe. Yep.